there. You are listening to IWG Radio, the place to be for all of your wellness needs. We just want to take a moment to thank you so much for listening and just let you know that any of the information that is provided is strictly for an educational resource and is not intended to diagnose or treat any conditions. The lifestyle interventions discussed should not be used as a substitute for any type of conventional medical therapy. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Integrative Wellness Radio, the place to be for cutting-edge, specific, and comprehensive integrative medical information that allows you to discover the root cause of your symptoms. So I am here with Dr. Nick. Everyone say hello.
How we doing?
So Dr. Nick actually works side by side with me at Integrative Wellness Group, and he happens to also be my husband. But today I wanted to interview him specifically because he has taken such an interest in working specifically with neurological cases that come through IWG's doors. And he's going to tell you a little bit more about himself and kind of why he got into it. But more importantly, he has been on this trek of learning more and more about, you know, what is the best way to work with the brain from a therapy standpoint, but also from a dietary standpoint. And we are in the current trend of keto, and many, many people are talking about keto and they are embarking on the diet. Some people are seeing great results, some people are having mixed results. And I really wanted him to expand a little bit more about keto. What does it mean? You know, what are some of the things that you need to know if you're embarking on the diet? And what are some of the other ways you can actually get into what we call ketoacidosis? So we're going to really dive in and expand upon this topic and have you really understand from a dietary perspective what you might be doing right and what you might be doing wrong from a ketogenic standpoint. So Dr. Nick, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you even got into the world of working with the brain and the neurological system?
Well, I mean, what I love about the brain is that it runs everything. It's in charge. It's like, I played baseball and I love playing baseball. And if anybody follows baseball, it's the catcher that's in control. It's because the catcher actually sees everything and, you know, calls the plays that you could say, and the brain's like the catcher. So it runs everything. And if the brain is not functioning well, nothing else can actually function well. And that's what we realized. I mean, part of our practice for a long time was like 100% Lyme patients, and we got amazing results biochemically, but then there were those Lyme patients that they still weren't better. I mean, they were better on paper and their biochemical and, you know, Borrelia wasn't showing up and a lot of the co-infections weren't showing up anymore. But as a person, they weren't better, and it's because their brain wasn't better. So even though biochemically we can chase a lot of things that we think is a huge culprit and sometimes adds to the dysfunction and disservice of, you know, the autonomic nervous system and the brain not functioning properly, but at the end of the day, you got to fix the brain. Otherwise, the person's actually not going to be healthy. And like my past experiences, I've had somewhere between 7 and 13 concussions, some of them minor, some of them major. But from that post-concussive syndrome, I've had a lot of symptoms myself. And for a while, I wasn't even really conscious of, you know, why some of my stomach issues, why I was even having stomach issues, because I had a great diet and I was living a healthy lifestyle. But now learning that most of my gastrointestinal issues actually came from trauma from my concussions, just from continued learning, that I was like, oh wow. So I was missing a big boat many years ago, and I've just constantly been fascinated with the connection of, you know, what you can do to hack the brain, what you can do to hack the body to hack the brain, and just living a better optimal life.
And I think it's really important what you said is that sometimes it's the brain affecting the other organ systems, but I think also vice versa, you know, there are specific scenarios that the organs can also be affecting the brain as well. It's about really analyzing the person in the right way to understand what is the root cause. And I think that's really why we do what we do, is we always are trying to dig to really find that root cause and understand what the effect is, because sometimes the effect is the brain, but sometimes it's the dysfunction of the brain that is causing the effect in the gut or causing the effect of the hormones.
Yep.
Or, you know.
And I mean, today, because people don't come to you right away, it's, you know, they come when they feel like crap, is you have to work on both pathways. You know, you have to work, you know, inside out and outside in is what I always say to people. It's like, we need to address, you know, yeah, the neurotransmitters, the hormones, the things that are being affected inside, not only being created, you know, via the gastrointestinal system, but also being created by the brain. But then we also have to do neurological exercises as well as physical exercises to connect that brain and body. And even my favorite is, you know, being able to do certain activities to be able to increase stimulation of, you know, peristalsis. Peristalsis is like the activation that moves food throughout the colon. So it's like there's so many ways to affect both the internal systems as well as the external systems. But I found really you get the best results when you treat somebody as a whole and doing it all together.
Taking an integrative approach, right?
Boom.
So with that being said, I really want to tie back to getting into really understanding keto, because I know that you have a very specific way that you look at keto, and you look at the body and how it can get into a state of ketoacidosis, but be extremely effective without compromising the gastrointestinal system. So I want you to just talk a little bit more about this, because there are many, many people that are doing keto and they're getting great results from an energy standpoint. They might be losing weight, but they also might be having other types of effects that they're maybe aware of, maybe they're unaware of from a gastrointestinal standpoint. And I really want to expand upon it. And then I want to tie it back to some of the things that we really educate people on in the practice when it comes to understanding their blood type and how that plays a role dietary wise. But why don't you talk a little bit about getting people into ketoacidosis, and what do you believe is one of the best ways to do that?
Yeah, so I mean, first let me just explain what ketoacidosis is and, you know, ketones and why it's this amazing thing. Ketones are like literally fats. So our body has different systems that it utilizes for energy. For the most part, you know, we use sugar, we use carbs, it's glucose, what it gets broken down to. And that's for the most part what our body and our brain utilizes for energy. But there's also other things that can honestly be more efficient than glucose. And as you transfer over from that, you know, sugar system, the next best system that you can use is ketones, is fat. It's actually a lot more stable and honestly more efficient than sugars. And that's why it's all the rave, is because you can cut down a lot of inflammatory markers by getting yourself into a ketoacidosis state. Sometimes it's via foods, sometimes it's via fasting, and sometimes you can get into a ketogenic state by limiting the amount of calories and being specific on what types of foods that is. There's a couple diets that you can follow to achieve that state as well. But really the biggest thing about ketoacidosis or ketones is that you're utilizing fats for your main energy fuel, and people are getting amazing, amazing results with it today.
So what's the big reason that it is enhancing the brain function when you go into the state of ketosis?
I think the biggest aspect that's weirdly overlooked is that our brain is fat, and every single thing in our body utilizes cholesterol, and our brain is mainly cholesterol as well. So it's like when you feed the brain or you feed your body something that utilizes fats, and you're going to feed a system that's primarily fat, it's a win-win situation.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's something that I know a lot of people are unaware of is, and I did a brief video on this, excuse me, on social media, because when my patients have low cholesterol coming up in their blood work, I actually am more concerned than when I even see higher cholesterol. And it's primarily because 2/3 of the brain is made of cholesterol, and it's also the precursor to all of your hormones. So cholesterol is not necessarily as bad as it's been made out to be in a lot of conventional medicine. And it's something that's absolutely necessary for a healthy brain, and also for a healthy endocrine system, which is the system that regulates your hormones. So having fat and having good fat is very, very important. And that's definitely something that I want to clarify when it comes to the versions of the ketogenic diet, because I think at this point, keto diets are so big and there are so many people that are advocating for it that there are many, many versions that are out there, and there are many versions available to us on the internet. And I always find it interesting because we always want to opt for the one that resonates with us. So if there's that one thing that we're really stressed about giving up and we find the version of keto that allows us to have it, then, you know, we're going to go for it. So if you're looking at someone who's talking about a ketogenic diet that's utilizing a ton of cheese and you love cheese, then you're probably going to stick with that person's version of the ketogenic diet. But I think it's really important for us to understand a little bit more about doing the keto diet, but being really, really strategic to get the weight loss, to get the energy, to get the benefits for the brain, but not necessarily overload our liver and our gallbladders. And I would love for you to expand upon that.
Yeah, I mean, people, we hear something today and we tend to run with it past the point of common sense. We just get lost in, because there's so many benefits to, you know, be in that ketogenic state. You know, it increases BDNF, which is brain-derived nootropic factor, which has the ability to help the body, the brain detox itself, and can even actually help the body utilize to make new neurons. It helps, like I was saying, with the detoxing, it helps really actually kill off the weak cells and the damaged cells. So there's tons of benefits of being in that ketogenic state. And what I've found is people have just kind of crossed that, you know, line where it goes, this is science, this makes sense, and has kind of like ran with it, almost like what Atkins was back in the day. Like, fundamentally, Atkins is a ketogenic diet, but people just kind of took it too far and ate poor quality foods of proteins and fats.
And the artificial sweeteners were advocated with the Atkins diet as well.
Right. And really, it's like, there's, for black and white purposes, there's two ways to get in the state. So you can get in it by really cutting out all of your carbs and really just eating a lot of mainly proteins, fats. Of course, you want to have some veggies, but nothing that's going to spike any glucose with that. And then the opposite side of it is getting into more of a fasting state. So then fasting, there's intermittent fasting, and then there's regular fasting where you're just fasting for at least 24 hours or longer. Both have their pros and cons. I would say starting where I started was more on the fasting side of things. And actually, I started with the fasting side of things because I'm a blood type A diet. And with that, I don't process and don't digest proteins that well, which I grew up in Iowa. Like, I didn't honestly, this is really funny, I didn't understand that you could have a meal without meat until I went to crunchy California. And my friends in California were having meals and it was like a salad. I'm like, great. Like, where's the salad with the meat? And they're like, no, this is all we're having. And I'm like, this is not a meal. Like, where I come from, like, we're having some type of this. We might have a side salad and then some potatoes. And unfortunately,
let's be real. You didn't eat salad growing up.
We didn't.
The salad was actually quite the combination of corn with cottage cheese.
Maybe a little iceberg lettuce somewhere. very nutritious. Yes, the Midwest. But I loved meat, and it was literally my upbringing is, you know, we ate meat. And when I realized that from doing food analysis and also understanding the blood type diet and how the two actually correlate, so so well together.
I just want to say something quickly. Since Dr. Nick is my husband,
she likes to call me out. Let's preface this.
So he decided to pretty much ignore me when I was trying to educate him on the blood type diet. And I kept telling him that he's really not supposed to consume much animal protein as an A blood type. And I actually, and for those of you that don't know, there is an app. It's called Eat Right for Your Blood Type. And I have the app on my phone. And in the beginning, when we were really understanding this diet, I had it on my phone and I was still learning it. So I pulled it out at a restaurant and I was, you know, checking to see if there was something that I wasn't supposed to be eating because I was planning on ordering a specific dish. And he grabbed it out of my hand and he's like, wait, I'm not supposed to eat any meat? And I remember it was just the pure devastation in his eyes. But it was very interesting because he didn't, you know, necessarily actively say, I'm going to really try to follow this. But he slowly started to, you know, be more aware of his blood type and follow it. And it was about 2 weeks later that he came to me and he said, I actually feel radically different by making sure that I'm avoiding some of the, you know, the different things that I shouldn't be eating for my blood type. So it was very interesting to see it in action because I don't think you had complaints per se, but once you removed some of those things, you were like, I actually feel better. I didn't even realize that my stomach wasn't that great.
Well, it didn't affect my stomach too much, but I once cutting it out and I would, you know, I'd play and because with my blood type, nothing's beneficial, but some things are neutral. So neutral means, yeah, I can eat it. It doesn't necessarily get broken down the best or like really have healing properties, but it doesn't, those meats wouldn't have like a lot of distress and create an inflammatory process within me. But what I did find is on the ones to really avoid, they did create inflammation and I have this lovely inflammatory marker around my finger. It's called a wedding ring. And when I'm inflamed, it doesn't move. Like, it gets stuck. And when I'm nice and healthy and hydrated, I can actually see a gap on both sides of my finger. So that's really what I look at to see, you know, am I inflamed, am I not? And then it's really a direct thing because sometimes you're not conscious of how well your conscious is actually doing. And it's really my guide to, am I going to be clear today thinking or am I going to have some brain fog? And it's all done through looking at my awesome, beautiful wedding ring.
Well, one thing I'll say too is I feel like for women, it's a little bit different. Yeah, some of us will definitely notice that our ring is hard to get on or off at times when we're inflamed. But I know a lot of women tend to weigh themselves. And if you are fluctuating with your weight day by day and you're fluctuating anywhere between 1 up to even 5 pounds per day, that is an inflammatory process. That is not weight gain. I think that's really important for women to understand because they can get very upset, very frustrated, and, you know, really try to decipher and deconstruct what they've been eating. And it's not necessarily that you're gaining fat tissue by any means, but you might be eating things that are creating this inflammatory response. So I want to circle back though to, you know, talking about the keto diet and, you know, how you were getting yourself into ketosis, you know, by making the dietary changes and then even when you started to play around with fasting.
Yeah, so, I mean, I tried to do both. I like to experience everything myself so I can speak firsthand with people. My body did, from my blood type, my body did a lot better with fasting and getting into that ketogenic state than it did with meats, mainly because, for the most part, my body, it's not beneficial for me. But if you have other diet like an O blood type or something that's, you know, you're able to have a good selection of proteins that are going to be really beneficial for you as well as healing, then that's amazing. And even going on to, this is like a big part that people mistake and it's like that common sense is, all right, so if you have like blood type O and it's good and you're doing these things, quality, quality, quality. It's like they'll just go like crazy and eat all this poor quality meat and fats. And it's not to be scared that, like, yeah, meats and fats are great for you. Like, butter is amazing, ghee is amazing. but it needs to be pasture raised, it needs to be organic, and if you can get local, it's going to be best. And the same thing goes for meat, like pasture raised, pasture finished, like it has to have this quality. Otherwise, even if you're in a ketogenic state, you could be just uploading your system with tons of steroids, tons of toxins, tons of chemicals. The list goes on and on. So you have to really be conscious and well-rounded in any like protocol you're doing. And I think that's where a lot of people, even if it's beneficial for them and they're not having the positive effects, it's just because they're missing that one link. And it's like, congratulate them, you're doing so many things awesome and amazing. Let's just tweak this and have better quality, and then you'll start getting really good effects of being in that ketogenic state. Because at the same time, your body's going to need to detox. Even if it's good for you, healthy fats and healthy proteins, if you're overloading the system with that, that taxes your gallbladder and your liver. So your liver utilizes bile that's produced in your gallbladder to really help break down fats and proteins. So it is a stress on those systems. So you need to make sure everything else in your lifestyle and your diet is really clean, so you're not adding more stress to those systems. Because if you do, then it will be like a good thing going bad. That's going to create more inflammation and more side effects when it really wasn't needed, and it could have been a huge healing aspect. From that, I don't promote, me personally, I don't promote being in a single diet long term. So if you're doing a ketogenic diet, and even if you know your O blood type or a blood type that does decently with proteins and fats, I'm not personally a big advocate of doing that forever or doing that long term, because you need to give those systems a break to be able to heal, to be able to flush themselves out, and then jump back at it. And you could even do, like, if you're doing ketogenic diet, take a break, do some fasting, really allow those systems to detox. Maybe do a couple of coffee enemas to really flush out, you know, the bile ducts from the liver and really boost the liver. There's tons of things you can do to increase the quality of the liver and the gallbladder. And even a big thing is with fasting and ketogenic diets, I'll find like people will come in, like they're doing this, but they'll eat tons of calories of protein and fat late at night. And you're like, once again, you're doing so many amazing things, but you're missing just a huge important portion, is that after about 5 p.m., your gallbladder really starts producing less and less bile. And when that happens, we're not physically able to break down those proteins and fats really efficiently. So if you're overdoing these proteins and fats late at night, you're not going to be able to break it down, and you're going to create more inflammation. And I mean, you'll get into a ketogenic state, but it's not going to be in a really healthy way, because it'll kind of be somewhere between you only have protein in, but at the same time you're fasting because you're really not even digesting the proteins and the fats, and that's creating inflammation. So something that you could be doing to create amazing results, it's usually just like this one little thing that needs to be tweaked in a diet to really make it really efficient. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Did I go too crazy?
No, it definitely makes sense. I think that one of the things that I want to circle back to try to create just a little bit more clarity on this concept of using keto with your blood type, is to give those of you clarity on if you're going to go the route of the keto diet and you know your blood type, there's a couple of things you should be aware of. So Dr. Nick has made it clear that as an A blood type, you're not necessarily supposed to do a ton of animal protein, because it is very difficult for an A blood type to digest a lot of red meat in particular. So when it comes to going into a ketogenic diet and you look at those generalized ketogenic guidelines, is if you are an A blood type, you really need to be gravitating more towards poultry and fish as your primary sources of protein. So you definitely need to be steering away from the red meat, so again, you're not overloading your liver and gallbladder and gastrointestinal system as a whole. If you are an O blood type, you can definitely handle a large portion of animal protein. You really do need to be avoiding pork of, you know, the entire family of animal-based protein. But on the flip side, ketogenic diets do advocate for a lot of fats, and they advocate fats from cheeses as well and dairy products. So you do need to know as an O blood type that you're really not supposed to be doing barely any cow-based dairy. And that includes cheeses to ice creams to milks to creams, etc. It is actually best for you to gravitate more towards goat and sheep-based dairy opposed to cow-based dairy. And if you're in the world of A or even AB blood type, you do need to be aware of avoiding chicken as a protein. You actually do better with red meat in those blood types. But you also are going to find yourself not being able to tolerate some of the fats, even in the world of avocado and coconut oils, which I know are fats that are advocated in the ketogenic diet as well. So when you're dealing with your blood type and you're trying to do this ketogenic diet, if you are overindulging in foods that are difficult for your body to break down, you will see a burden on either the liver, the gallbladder, the pancreas, or even the colon and the small intestine. So you might be having all of this great benefit when it comes to your energy, and you might find that your brain is more sharp and you're more alert, but then you might notice, not immediately, but you might notice over time that there is some gastrointestinal disruption, or you're having some right-sided rib cage pain, which is where your liver gallbladder is located. Or you go get your blood work done and they tell you that your liver enzymes are up or your gallbladder seems to be stressed. So these are things that are really important to understand. And for those of you listening that might be saying, oh, well, there's not enough research behind the blood type diet, and you know, the studies proved that it's irrelevant. First of all, the studies were not well constructed. If the studies had more controlled groups that compared or pretty much looked at autoimmunity or inflammatory conditions and followed the person along their journey doing the blood type diet, they may have found that those markers changed dramatically. But more importantly, what I want to say about it is we are two practitioners that are working in clinical practice. So we see thousands of patients, and when we look at our patients and we test them for food allergies, these are patients that are coming up for food sensitivities and food allergies, and these foods almost 100% of the time are matching with the foods that they should be avoiding for their blood type. We've seen it over and over and over again, and that is one of the reasons why we educate people on their blood type, because these are foods that, based on your blueprint, you are actually struggling to break down. So look at the blood type diet. You can find it online. There's a book, there's an app. It's really, really interesting when you start looking at it and you start noticing, oh my gosh, I actually really don't like that food. Or when I eat that, I feel really tired or my stomach bothers me. And that's another disclaimer is, this is not always about stomach aches or stomach bothering you or abnormal bowel movements. This could be fatigue. This could be brain fog. When you're eating foods, if you're eating foods, I should say in abundance, that are in the avoid list of your blood type. So don't just gauge it on your gastrointestinal function, gauge it on your energy levels, and gauge it on your inflammation, and gauge it on your brain fog, because those are other manifestations of how food can affect us in a negative way. Mm-hmm. Another thing too is when you are dealing with keto, so Dr. Nick said something really important. He said, you don't ever want to do one diet long term. And we've worked with patients that have come to us and they've said that, oh, I've been on ketogenic diet for 2 years, 3 years. And then we test them and we obviously take into consider what their blood type is. And we will find that their gallbladders and livers are overloaded because their whole entire diet is a huge abundance of protein and fat. And like Dr. Nick said, is over time, that could become a stress when you're doing this over the long term. And one of the food groups that is actually the most cleansing to the liver and gallbladder is soluble fiber, which is something that you're completely avoiding on a ketogenic diet. And soluble fiber is the two foods that are most abundant is steel-cut oats and beans. And when I say beans, I don't necessarily mean string beans. I mean black beans, cannellini beans, navy beans, kidney beans, etc. So when you are incorporating some level of these foods that have soluble fiber, it is actually quite cleansing to both your liver, your gallbladder, and your gastrointestinal system. So you really want to keep this on your radar, because if you start noticing that you're constipated, or you start noticing that you're having some trouble with metabolizing alcohol, like you're drinking a glass of wine and feeling really terrible, or you're really struggling with the fats now, like maybe you're having a couple bites of somebody's fettuccine alfredo and you feel like you're keeled over and want to die. These are all signs that your liver and gallbladder are overloaded and you need more soluble fiber in your diet. So I think this is just really, really important things to understand when you're embarking on a ketogenic diet is, yes, it has tremendous, tremendous benefits, but you might need to tailor your ketogenic diet by taking into consideration what is your blood type.
And that would, like, I mean, a lot of this is probably, our goal wasn't to steer people away from doing a ketogenic diet. It's just anytime you see a fad, like I said before, it's like people cross the line and they do something good and they either change it so good's not good anymore, or they've prolonged it. So it's, the body needs balance. Like, all health is just being in that homeostatic state and being in balance.
Thank you all for listening. We really hope you got value out of this. Check us out, integrativewellnessgroup.com. And if you haven't already, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a review. We really appreciate you hanging out with us, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you.